The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation. I'm Brian McClain, broadcasting live out of Central Texas, here with Timothy Shea out of New York. Timothy, it's great to see you today. Welcome to State of the Nation.
Great to see you, Brian. Welcome, welcome. Crazy days, huh?
Yeah, it really is. I wanted to start just kind of thinking about yesterday, and I'm just thinking about all this money that they just passed, right? Military funding and the TikTok thing. And I just, it's gnawing at me because I'm thinking about Sam Bankman-Fried, and I'm thinking about Ukraine in particular, the utter failure that is that war. I think most people understand it's not winnable by conventional means with what's on the chessboard right now. Another $95 billion, $68 billion, whatever, is not going to win the war, right? So what happened in the last election cycle when a whole bunch of money went to Ukraine? And what if there's a whole bunch of Sam Bankman-Fried type people out there in various countries collecting this money? I'm just gaming it out a little bit here. I mean, I'm not making any accusations. I understand Sam Bankman's charges that were all federal election style were dropped, yet he's still going to be in trouble. You see what I'm getting at here, Timothy? Do you think there's a threat?
I'm tracking
there?
Right there with you. And again, we're not making any allegations.
No.
But just
asking for a friend.
You know, was Sam the only one that didn't find a chair when the music stopped? Right? That's what it looks like. Don't worry, mm-hmm. Sam. We'll take care of you. You won't do any federal time. You'll do a little bit of state time. It's not a big deal. You're going to be plenty wealthy. You're a young man. You'll come back from this. We just need you to take the hit. It tracks. Because guess what else was in that? $3.5 billion with a B to facilitate and accelerate illegal immigration from the Middle East. So now we're going to have, we've got so many people pouring over our southern border. It's not just Mexicans looking for a better life. It's not Guatemalans that want to come here and start a business. They're coming from China, from Africa, from everywhere. Everywhere. This is the planned deconstruction, planned demolition of America.
Right. They're importing full societies, entire societies from around the world. It is staggering to see. And they're sitting there talking about TikTok. And that leads me to my other thing, the TikTok part. I'm thinking that a lot of Americans right now are probably thinking that the war funding, much of it is money laundering, and it will end up coming right back to probably the RNC and the DNC and their donors right at the right time in the, there's just too much potential for that. And then on top of that, they don't like that they can't control the narrative on TikTok. They have control of the narrative with all of our other platforms. X may be arguable. I think they do. But TikTok, they don't have control over. And TikTok is now saying, no, it's not going to happen. TikTok says this is an unconstitutional law, a TikTok ban, and we will challenge it in court. We believe the facts and the law are clearly on our side, and we will ultimately prevail. The fact is we have invested billions of dollars into the United States, essentially. So they may have a legal point there, but will this system, we know how important the narrative is to those that are controlling it.
Well, and the real issue is that it's a foreign company, and under Chinese law, it cannot be sold, okay?
Yeah.
It can't be sold to foreigners. So, and the Congress knew this when they passed that bill. This is all just another dog and pony show. But you know what, Brian? Mm-hmm. We are living in a golden age of technology. Last night, we were talking about a flame-throwing robotic dog. And today, I just saw the test flight of a flying car. It's a car that, like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, it sprouts wings, and you can fly like a plane.
Wow, pretty are cool. You sure you weren't watching the Back to the Future 4 trailer? That's amazing.
I definitely was not. This is a new vehicle. Pretty cool.
That's interesting. I remember watching Casey Neistat on YouTube doing a human-sized drone, like a quadcopter drone that was big enough for a pilot and flying that over a lake.
Yeah, this isn't that. Cool. This is a proper plane. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, TNT, I think State of the Nation needs our own flying car. So if you could please order that for us, we would be very grateful. But Actually, all you really need to do is know that there are many ways you can watch or listen to TNT. So you can stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store. Timothy and I recommend it highly. We even are live streaming on X, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. So we got you covered on today's News Talk TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
More fees.
Timothy, are we going to need pilot's licenses to drive this thing, or how do we get this?
Fear not. Your government is right there with its handout. You got to have a driver's license, got to have a pilot's license, got to register it as a vehicle, got to register as a plane. There's federal FAA taxes to pay, there's state vehicle taxes to pay. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Oh. You'll be taxed out the wazoo for this thing.
Okay, great. So basically, you got to be Bruce Wayne or Tony Stark to get one of these, as we all, as we unwashed plebs, all expected. I got an even bigger question, though. The big question, is it electric?
Yeah, you know, I knew you were going to go there. It's actually gasoline powered until you're in the air, and then it switches over to battery once you're up at altitude.
Okay, it's hybrid. It's hybrid flying car. Yeah. And what's the price tag? I want to know when. I want to know if I can have it and how much.
Didn't see that, but what do we care? TNT's borrowing it for us, right?
All right. All right. What is this one? Timothy, I noticed, oh my gosh, I noticed our guest is just about here. So I will forego what I was about to say because I'm really looking forward to speaking with our next guest here. His name is Ryan. And just to get him into the room here, I need to let you know that on April 24th, Goldman Sachs got a bit of a reality check from our next guest, Utah pastor Ryan Shaddix, on behalf of the National Center for Public Policy Research Free Enterprise Project, imploring that Goldman Sachs, that's right, we were talking about Sam Bankman-Fried, now we're talking about Goldman Sachs, ensure that their net zero goals are in fact based upon evidence and not partisan fairy tales. Ryan joins us now. Hey, Ryan, welcome to State of the Nation. So just by virtue of the term they're using, net zero there, I can tell any American who's thinking already knows that these goals are absolutely based in toxic partisan fairy tales. But first, explain what Goldman Sachs is doing here and how it works against their board's fiduciary duties, maybe.
Well, it's interesting that I was tabbed to bring this presentation to the shareholders meeting because it's definitely not my realm of expertise. But you know, just from a cursory understanding of where they're at, I mean, it's the entire agenda of the shareholders meeting was built around these multiple proposals that are really driven by just a woke mindset of trying to force these entities to operate on along some political lines rather than on lines that are built around good common sense, right? And so I was the 12th proposal, invited to present that for the National Council of Research Policy, policy research, and the reality is, like, bottom line is, they do not want to make money if they're going to continue down this net zero road. I mean, when I think of net zero, I think of the old terrible internet service that was free, quote unquote, right? And it was just full of bad marketing. And so anything that has anything to do with net zero is a bad idea.
Absolutely, it is. We know it's pretty much impossible. It's just, you know, it's like saying naturally flavored. It's anything but, you know, it's a marketing, it's a political marketing term at this point. So is this the crux of this? Is essentially that, like, if Goldman Sachs is investing in my business, say, or, you know, widget business X, widget business X then has to follow these sort of net zero rules, which, you know, couldn't put them out of business potentially? Or, you know, are we a layer up here and the board is now saying, hey, I don't know if we're going to be able to do this, you know, and still meet our fiduciary duties?
Yeah, I think that the board obviously had already planned going into the meeting, where its agenda was and where it would lie. And they're trying to walk this tightrope that so many of these businesses and these entities are trying to walk, where they're trying to make everybody happy. And really our proposal was built around like your fiduciary duty, to your shareholders and to realistically to, the nation you consider to be your own, is to make sure that we are balanced in our approach and that we're not being pushed along or bullied along by these, honestly, it's a zeitgeist, right? It's the spirit of the age, right? It's what people are trying to, get us to swallow hook, line, and sinker, and ultimately it will degrade our potential, not just as an economy, but as a nation. This is about national security at the end of the day.
Yeah, and really they need to go one level deeper, because the entire idea of fossil fuels is flawed. If you do the math, there weren't enough dinosaurs and plants to create all the oil that we've already pulled out of the earth and know that's still in there. Just like the Grand Canyon wasn't carved by solely the Colorado River, and there's water erosion on the Sphinx, even though the Sahara is now a desert, when 10,000 years ago it was lush and green, there are greater forces at play here. Most of the erosion we've seen in the world is due to the Great Flood, and natural gas and oil are the result of chemical reactions that occur deep within the Earth's crust. So anybody that's driven past a swamp in the summertime knows that plant matter and animal matter, it decays, it decomposes, it rots way before it could be covered with earth and eventually turned into oil. So insisting that this net zero policy be based on facts, let's go right to the first fact. And the fact is that fossil fuels are not the result of decomposed plant matter and animal matter.
Absolutely, man. I hate it when fossil fuel. It's just like, it's one of the worst parts. It's like this ever-present neuro-linguistic programming that even people that know better, myself included sometimes, you know, I catch myself saying it still because it was so heavily ingrained. But it's pretty well known that it's an abiotic process now. Yeah. So, you know, the hysteria, it's just like, I don't know, what do you make of the evolution of the hysteria and the talking points, Ryan? Because I remember when I was a kid, it was ozone layers, and then it was warming, and then it was, you know, save the whales and, you know, good nuclear plants. And now it's nuclear plants bad, coal bad, kill the whales, build, you know, hydro farms and wind farms and put people out of business if, you know, they don't upgrade from a gas mower to an electric mower.
Yeah, I think that if we're honest and we address the realities at hand here, right? Like, you know, me even being in that shareholders meeting, to be honest with you, was I considered to be sort of a Daniel moment, right? I did not belong there. I walked into the room and there are people there with these $5,000 suits, and they're talking about their kids, you know, graduating from NYU and pursuing their doctorates at Columbia, which I probably wouldn't be bragging about that today, but I definitely felt like I was swinging way above my weight class. But I believe God put me there for a specific reason, and it's to identify the realities that we are seeing. You said this neuro-linguistic programming, like that's the prince of the power of the air, right? He, in Ephesians chapter 2, talks about how that Satan is the prince of the power of the airwaves. And all of this, like I said before, this spirit of the age, this zeitgeist that is giving 1,000 people, billions of people over to this idea. They're just kind of just like lemmings, man, off the cliff. And it's really sad, right? It's a spiritual situation. And this vein of logic or illogic is just one aspect of, so this whole climate change is one fear, right, that has been implanted into humanity recently. There will be another fear that comes along down the road. But at the end of the day, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that's one of the messages that we really work hard on here, too, because it's particularly the media environment. One of our guests coming up next, one of my colleagues, he's renamed it the mass media cartel. And, you know, I know that the way that they treat us, the way that they do messaging at us, and the way that they shape and try to create culture and insert things, it's gotten so evil. It's gotten so devious. There are so many vectors from which they can attack us through that stuff. So, you know, for us, it's imperative to break through that that fog. And we certainly appreciate you joining us to help us do that. I know that people can follow you at cavalrychapel.com, I believe. Is there anywhere else you'd like to shout out, and any final thoughts before we have to let you go?
Yeah, our website is actually Calvary Sevier, CalvarySevier.com. And then honestly, the Center for nationalcenter.org, huge shout out to them for inviting me to kind of step to the plate for their organization and what they've done to help us out as well. And encourage everybody who's bright-minded and sane to move to Utah, man. We have a good spot here, so we'd love to have you.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for joining us. We'll look forward to speaking with you again. I have so many more questions I could ask you after being in that environment. But unfortunately, we got to let you go. We'll see you again real soon. That's Ryan Shaddix, everybody, right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Listen.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Was not a good day to be a Biden commiecrat. The left's plan to keep Donald Trump off the ballot and out of the Oval Office seems doomed to failure today. And here to break it down for us is our good friend Joe Flynn. Joe, welcome back to State of the Nation.
I think it started off great with all those union construction workers outside the courthouse screaming Trump, 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 USA, USA, and saying, and the one guy saying, when they asked him the question, what do you have to say to Biden? They said, F Joe Biden.
Yeah, F you, he said, and walked away. Mic drop moment.
Care less. They're all union guys, all former Democrats, all probably registered Democrats.
And Joe, as you know, because you've been involved in politics a long time, New York State has a lot of Republicans upstate, and they're talking about Donald Trump having a chance to win our fair empire state for the first time since Ronald Reagan took it in 1984.
Well, you know, listen, in the last midterm election, they won a bunch of seats, in especially in Long Island. The Republican Party won a bunch of seats. And if the Republican Party could get their act together, they could win a lot more seats. But the Republican Party is part of the problem. Donald Trump's popularity in New York is extremely high and getting higher. And now that they see what they're doing to him in his, you know, in his hometown, let's face it, he's a New Yorker. He can be living in Mar-a-Lago down here in Florida, but, you know, he's a New Yorker at heart. You know, the people in New York, the working class people in particular, love Donald Trump. And that was very apparent today on the streets of New York City, for sure.
You know, I noticed that in California, too, Joe. It's like there's so many Trump supporters there. You would think that the larger RNC / GOP would invest more time and effort into, you know, elevating those people's voices. You know, they it's like You know, Timothy talks about that a lot where he lives. It's like it's forced to be like 100% grassroots almost, because there's just not that same kind of rallying support. And when we see the kind of money that they just all sign off on in unison for stuff outside the country, it really leaves people wondering, like, what is going on with this party?
Well, I had I had the experience of actually working on a Trump campaign in 2020. I was with Catholics for Trump. I was in their group, and I did some campaigning, particularly in Pennsylvania and in the swing states. But you know what I noticed, honestly, is the RNC, and I hope it has changed, and I hope it changes now. You know, now that Rona is out of there, yeah, and, you know, I have high hopes for it, but I worry a little bit about their sense of urgency, because the opportunity is vast, and the opportunity is vast in big blue states like New York and California, but they tend to be very, you know, laser focused on areas that they think they can get electoral votes. And I understand that. But there's a lot of opportunities in a lot of these places that they're overlooking. And, you know, I hope they know what they're doing. I worry deeply that they do not know what they're doing, and that the new crew that just came in doesn't really have the time to make, you know, the changes that are necessary from all the damage that was done by Rona McDaniel and her, you know, ilk over the past several years. The Republican Party, let's be honest, is in really deep doo-doo. And it's just got terrible, terrible management, terrible leadership.
And terrible messaging. And you're absolutely right about them that they shouldn't be focusing solely on states where they think they can get electoral college votes, because there's a lot of opportunity in the House. California, oh, yeah. New York State, Illinois, we could be tipping more districts to the Republicans if we had a little more support from the national party. But it doesn't look like the Democrats really thought ahead here today, Joe, because by not allowing Donald Trump to attend the hearing on presidential immunity before the Supreme Court, Alvin Bragg kind of made the point of why presidential immunity is so important. And of course, the presidents are shielded from civil liability after the 1973 decision, Nixon versus Fitzgerald. But now we're talking about criminal liability at the periphery of their official duties. Where's that dividing line? And if the justices needed any more warning about how this system could be abused, Alvin Bragg just served it up on a platter.
Yeah, it was a really bad day for the special counsel in front of the Supreme Court today. I think it was a really bad day, which is a good day for America, because their case is so paper thin. And it was interesting, the dialogue between, for example, Kavanaugh and the prosecutor about Obama's extrajudicial murders of U.S. citizens with drones. Now, those U.S. citizens may have been terrorists. They still had the right to due process, and they were, you know, extrajudicially literally murdered. And of course, the argument that the special counsel made was, well, you know, Obama didn't actually do the murder himself, but he was the one who signed off on it. And so it's going to be really difficult. And I also think it was interesting in the New York case when they were talking about some of the materials about Stormy Daniels and this being election interference. Well, what about the 51 intelligence officials who signed a document saying that, you know, Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation? What was it, 3-4 weeks before the election in 2020? And that doesn't, you know, that's not considered election interference. So the double standard in both in Washington today in front of SCOTUS, as well as in front of the New York courts, was pretty obvious. And you have to be a really, really hardcore partisan to not see that. So a lot of independents are seeing this. A lot of people are starting to say, what is going on with the double standard and the corruption in the judicial and the DOJ that's just transforming this country and making a lot of people suspicious about where we're at, especially people that haven't been paying attention?
Well, you're absolutely correct. And just to underscore your point, that letter from 51 intelligence community members was issued before the 2020 election. Exactly. And this check that Donald Trump wrote, yeah, that that was signed after the election. So, you know, it's a complete inversion of reality here. You're absolutely correct. We've got some incoming headlines, but stay tuned for more Joe Flynn right here on State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Here is the news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. President Joe Biden signed a $95 billion foreign aid package on Wednesday, which includes substantial support for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The Senate passed the package with a 79-18 vote after bipartisan support helped overcome a filibuster. Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter Szijjártó, following discussions with Chinese counterpart Wang Yi in Beijing, endorsed China's peace plan for the Ukraine conflict, stating there is no solution to wars on the battlefield.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Joe, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the shot across the bow of the prosecution team that our Court of Appeals here in New York State issued today. And again, for folks that might not remember, in New York, the Supreme Court is actually not supreme. It's the lowest court. It's the trial level court. In the next level, the first level of appellate jurisdiction is this appellate division of the Supreme Court. And then the final arbiter of the law is the State Court of Appeals. And the State Court of Appeals threw out Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction. He's still in prison on the California charges. And they didn't exonerate him, but they held firm to the law that the prosecution violated the law by allowing witnesses that had no bearing on that case to testify and trying to portray Harvey Weinstein in a poor light. It's very clear in criminal law. The evidence must be limited to the crime for which the defendant was indicted. And those prosecutors went far afield. And I'm thinking that this was the Court of Appeals, which remanded the case back to the Supreme Court for a retrial. I'm thinking this is the Court of Appeals firing a shot across the bow of these prosecutors in Trump's criminal trial, saying, you know, this isn't going to fly, so give up the ghost.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, and I didn't get a real good chance to got that came kind of out late in the day today. I didn't get a chance to see it. I was driving most of the afternoon. You know, that kind of did that kind of come out of the blue? Because if it didn't come out of the blue, then I think you're straight on there, Tim, about the fact that they're really shooting this out and saying, hey, listen, if you bring this in front of us, we're going to throw it right. We're going to kick it right back out. So,
yeah, the case was already heard. And so, yeah, the decision today came kind of out of the blue. We didn't know when it was going to come down, but it came down today, which I think is interesting timing.
Very interesting timing. You know, I think this case, I worry, though, to be honest with you, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I've been talking to a lot of people about it. I worry that they're going to do everything they can to pin Trump down in this New York case. I hope that he can get out of it. But it's really, you know, as I understand it, he's not happy at all about the amount of time that he's having to spend away from campaigning and in front of this court, in front of this judge who is clearly partisan, who was a Biden donor, whose daughter raised, as I understand it, over $100 million using this particular case. I mean, there is nothing but corruption, you know, up and down on this, and it's hurting Trump. And I worry that they're going to go to extreme measures to try and actually convict him and actually give him jail time. I really worry about that in this particular case, because they're running out of options with the case down in Florida with Judge Cannon. They're running out of options now in front of SCOTUS, which is going to blow up the whole J6, and it's going to blow up a lot of the J6 convictions too once it goes through SCOTUS. I just think that they know that this might be one of their last chances to try to really stymie Donald Trump, and I think they're going to go for broke on this. I worry about that.
Yeah, we've been wondering about that too, Joe. This is a question for maybe both you guys. I really don't know the answer, but when I was looking at the jury, I noticed that two of the people on the jury are lawyers. And I'd never really thought about, I'd never, maybe I just don't know if that's standard practice. Joe, do you know, is that normal to have lawyers on a jury, or are lawyers usually dismissed?
I mean, I don't know any lawyers or citizens, so they get called up for jury duty like anybody else, but uh-huh. It is a little odd that you have a lawyer. The speaking of jurors, New York is a very difficult place to get a fair trial for somebody like Donald Trump, where, you know, if you just look at the population, they're probably voting, especially in the last few elections, they probably voted 70% against him. Now, that might change going forward. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting that jurors being lawyers, you know, I don't think there's ethical issues around that, but it's kind of coincidental that they chose a couple of lawyers to be on, be on a jury.
Yeah. Should my hackles be up, Timothy?
Okay. I'm sorry.
I was wondering what you think. Should my hackles be up when I hear that, Timothy?
It's unusual. It's not unheard of, but it is unusual. Lawyers typically get dismissed, but sometimes they serve. Often it's the defense that doesn't want a lawyer on the case, but sometimes the defense does want a lawyer so that they can teach the jury how ridiculous a case is. And I think that's what happened here. And Joe, as to your point about how much time the Judge Merchan is forcing Donald Trump to spend in New York, not only is he scheduling out-of-state rallies for they're off every Wednesday, so Tuesday night and Wednesday, and then flying back to New York for court on Thursday morning, he's actually taking advantage of the newfound popularity. And of all people, Karl Rove praised him, not for complaining about the cases he's been doing, but by going out to those lunch bucket guys and reminding them how bad the Biden economy was. And even Karl Rove had to admit that Trump is really hitting his stride. And what he's done, he's going to have a big rally in the Bronx for Tina Forte, and he's going to have a huge rally at Madison Square Garden. So New York is in play.
Those rallies are going to be off the charts, because the amount of people in those areas, you know, in the greater New York City area, going out to Long Island and the upstate, you know this, Tim, because you live in the state, the amount of support this man has in that state is off the charts. It's going to really overwhelm the sort of liberal groups that seem to want to, the liberal elite that seem to want to dominate the political sphere in New York. And he's going to get so much video footage of this, it's going to be unbelievable for his campaign. So that's, good for him. The guy's a master at branding. The guy's a master at, positioning himself, and he's wonderful behind the camera. I just feel terrible the fact that the country is in the situation where, the political party that's currently in power is weaponizing the justice system against its political opponents. It's banana republic, third world stuff, and it's un-American. And, I think it's going to backfire on them. I just worry that they're going to bend the law so much to try and crush Trump, or they're going to find one little thing to put him away, or to do something to take him out of the election. I worry about that. I worry some technicality that we're not aware of, something that's unforeseen, that they really, really make it, because they're doing everything they can to make sure this man doesn't get reelected.
Yeah, I have those same concerns, and I talk to a lot of people that have those same concerns, and this for many people started in 2020, when we started seeing, obviously it goes back to, campaigning, the whole, Trump coming down the escalator goes from there forward. But when it comes to the really, nationally existential things like you're describing right here, I think back to 2020, and it's just like, we saw the entirety of our political class behave in ways that signaled to us that they don't care about our rights and they don't care about our votes. And rather than having any mea culpa for that since then, minus a couple, they seem to be leaning into that behavior. And I don't know, it feels like it's more than just radical of chaos. It feels like they have some sort of plan there. And I'm concerned about that too.
I got to tell you, if you look back at 2020, it wasn't just the political class that turned its back on the American people and on the rule of law. Our judiciary,
yeah,
including our Supreme Court, okay, and many of the people that Trump put on that Supreme Court, turned its back on the Constitution, turned its back on the American people when they did not hear specific cases, especially Ken Paxton's case, the disenfranchisement of Texas voters, and they responded with a one sentence. You know, the attorney general, 22 attorneys general in this country that signed on to that case had no standing when their people, when they were saying, hey, what happened in Pennsylvania disenfranchised the voters in my state, Texas, North Dakota, wherever it was. And our judiciary, our Supreme Court, which we're relying on right now on the presidential immunity case, turned its back on them. And every single case that Rudy brought, every single case that Sidney brought, no standing. Not only that, but now they gave the opportunity for prosecutors in Georgia, prosecutors in Arizona to go after people who were questioning the election, the validity of an election in 2020, which everyone has a God-given right in this country, a constitutional right to question anything, especially, you know, free and fair elections. But to be prosecuted for questioning it is outrageous. And so the fact that we kind of have this weak judiciary right now, and I don't have I hope the Supreme Court does the right thing, but based on what they did in 2020, I don't have a lot of faith.
Joe, we're right there with you. We're going to have to leave it there, but you're exactly correct. This isn't the first time in history that things have been this bad, though. Recall the election of 1876 when President Grant had to send troops into states in order to make sure that the electors for Rutherford B. Hayes were actually allowed to seal their ballots. Things have been bad before. I have faith that things are going to be better, okay now. But we can't be looking for a political solution, as you know, Joe. We've got to be looking at the big guy upstairs for the final answer.
Amen to that.
All right. Stay tuned for more State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk TNT.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
Most people are unaware that bad bacteria can grow quickly in food that's stored, prepped, or cooked incorrectly, and that can lead to food poisoning. To avoid bad bacteria, always make sure your hands and cooking utensils are clean. Keep raw meat and chicken away from food that won't be cooked. Run your fridge at or below 5 degrees Celsius and use a meat thermometer to ensure your meat's being cooked to at least 75 degrees Celsius. For more tips on keeping bad bacteria at bay, visit foodsafety.asn.au.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk TNT.
So Politico says Joe Biden has largely shied away from lengthy sit-downs with national news outlets, but he made an exception for Univision last week. The interview with the Hispanic media giant wasn't just a tit-for-tat with Donald Trump, who had appeared on the network months prior. It was an implicit admission from Biden that he has to do more to reach Hispanic voters who have soured on him. And we're now joined by the co-founder of Latino Wall Street, the Latino capitalist, Tony Delgado. Welcome to State of the Nation. How are you, my friend?
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to see you. Thanks for joining us. So is Biden really stepping up Latino outreach? And if yes, is it working? Will it work? What do you think?
Well, if we look at the economy, we look at the things that are happening in the country over the last 4 years, it's been a disaster, right? Not only for Latino families, but for families all across the country. And Latinos are waking up. They're waking up and they're realizing that these policies are not serving their community, our community. The Latino vote is something that everyone is trying to manipulate during this election cycle, right? We saw millions and millions of dollars pouring into super PACs last week that are specifically targeting swing states and specifically targeting the Spanish-speaking and Latino vote, right? We make up, I think it's about 15% of the vote, so that's enough to swing the election. And traditionally, you know, Latinos and African Americans have been pandered to by the Democratic Party, right? So whether it was Hillary Clinton saying that she has hot sauce in her purse, to Joe Biden trying to play reggaeton at a press conference to try to seem like he's hip, right? The pandering is in full effect, but the actual policies that they put into place are not actually helping the Latino community. And I think Latinos are really waking up, especially here in Miami, Florida, where I am. We have a huge immigrant community from Cuba and from Venezuela, and they've seen firsthand the dangers of socialism, the dangers of communism. And that's why a lot of them migrated here. That's why a lot of them immigrated here. They immigrated here to chase the American dream. And now they're seeing the policies of the Biden administration closely mirror those of Venezuela and Cuba and these oppressive governments where they escaped, right? You look at political persecution, right? Lawfare. They are taking the former president of the United States and preventing him from campaigning during an election with all these fake and trumped up charges, right? So I think the Latino population is waking up, and definitely in South Florida, where I am, Latinos for Trump is really, really strong.
I can verify that. We have a cigar company, deploymentcigar.com, and are down in Miami quite often. And last time we were down, I was surprised we didn't have a single Cuban Uber driver. They were all Venezuelan. And I always asked, I always have a conversation with people, you know, how long you've been here, where you're from, why'd you come? And every single person I talked to just echoed your points, Tony. And of course, Miami is home of Los Tres de Habana, which had the wonderful song, "Oh My God, I Will Vote for Donald Trump." The enthusiasm down in South Florida's Latino community is off the charts for the president. But I think it's starting to carry, as you said, starting to carry nationwide, not only because of Joe's overt racism through the years, but because his policies are really hurting all the different Latino communities. It's not a monolithic voting block that Democrats think. Each community from different parts of the world have different priorities, and all of them are being hurt by Joe Biden's policies.
Definitely. And the Latino immigrants, I mean, the Democrats think it's a home run. Like, we're just going to, you know, make a couple of tacos and play a little bit of salsa, and we're just guaranteed to get the Latino vote. When in reality, Latinos are very conservative. They're Christians. They're Catholics.
They're very family oriented.
They're very family oriented, right? Heavy religious beliefs. And so I think the policies align a lot more with conservatives when you actually break them down. Now, there's a huge disinformation campaign that we as Republicans have to actually combat, right? Because the mainstream narrative is Trump's a racist, Trump hates you, right? John Leguizamo went on Comedy Central. He was probably paid a lot of money to do so, but he went on Comedy Central last week and did this whole monologue talking about how Trump is so racist and he hates Spanish people. And if that's all you listen to, right, you're going to believe it, right? So uninformed voters usually don't like Trump, but the more informed a voter is, chances are they're going to wake up and they're going to know that the Republican Party has policies that's going to help them and their family.
Right. And that level of being informed has gone up over the last 4 years, because the psyops have just become thicker and stronger, and the effects of them are hitting all of us now. Everybody sees that, you know, gas is going up and food is going up and quality of service is going down. more difficult to find jobs, and just a lot of just general instability having been injected into the system. But, you know, people saw what happened with their kids when they had to put their kids on telelearning, and all of a sudden, I mean, do you feel like that's enough? Like that spark that kind of happened over the last, you know, between 4 and 9 years has really gone more mainstream than it was? And is it enough to combat that mono, you know, that homogenous messaging that we're getting from the mass media?
Well, I'm not quite sure if it's enough just yet, right? There's a lot of propaganda that's out there, and the average voter, the average consumer is still being fed this brand that Trump is racist and Joe Biden's the black messiah, right? But thanks to the internet, like you said, I think a lot of the psyops are not working anymore. A lot of the misinformation campaigns and mainstream media like propaganda is not working right anymore. People don't watch television as often as they used to, right? Most young people, especially like under 40, right, are not really getting their news from mainstream television outlets, right? And one of the other things that I think is really interesting, thanks to the internet, is all of the missteps of Joe Biden are really well documented, really easy, right? All the slip-ups, all the speeches where it's obvious that he has dementia, right? And those clips go viral, right? So even if you're not super political, even if you're not super tuned in and you're not watching Fox News or MSNBC, let's be honest, the average American doesn't really care about politics, and the average American doesn't vote, right? We're very, very disconnected from the political system. A lot of people are apolitical, right? And so they only get the clips. But those clips where Joe Biden is losing his memory and he's losing his mind, or he says something racist, right? He says, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. And all those clips that end up going viral, right? In the past generations, before the power of the internet, right? That little slip up would have happened. The newscaster would have said, okay, cue the commercials or cue camera 3. And you never would have saw that clip ever again, right? But thanks to the power of the internet, all of this truth is getting exposed, right? There's videos of Joe Biden 20 years ago saying really, really racist things, right? And there's monologues and there's people that are on TikTok and on Instagram that are making this content. And I think things like that are really cracking the shield that the mainstream media uses to push out misinformation. And I think the more that we can do to get grassroots efforts in these cities, right? Micro influencers was a huge thing since the pandemic, right? You had all these voices that were waking up and using their social media following, right? And maybe you have 500 followers, maybe you have 1,000, right? But if you're able to speak to your local community, I think it's more important than ever for people to share their political views on social media and leverage that tool, right? We also saw them deplatform the president of the United States, right? When they deplatformed Alex Jones a few years prior, we thought, okay, it's Alex Jones. He's an extremist. He's a little crazy, right? That'll never happen to me. That'll never happen to us, right? And then we witnessed in real time something extremely, extremely historic, which is the deplatforming of a sitting president. And I think that's serious. I think that is a serious, serious thing that we need to beware of, right? Because we've never saw that happen in American history. In fact, it was the opposite. The president used to have the ability to signal the emergency broadcast system, right? To signal, to have a voice, to do the State of the Union address and have the attention of all Americans. And we saw for the first time ever the censoring of a sitting president. And that speaks to the power of social media. But here's the secret, right? And this is what I was talking about, micro influencers, why they're so important. Here's the secret. They can deplatform the president. They can deplatform a huge account like a DC Drano or some big influencer who has a big voice, but they can't deplatform everyone, because if they deplatform everyone, they don't have a platform, right? So it's really more important to not only have these big accounts that are sharing things, but small accounts, individuals like you listening at home need to be sharing and making your political voices known.
You're absolutely correct. The soil's never been more fertile. But let's face facts. The Republican Party has done a horrible job of messaging on its own. And it needs to step up its game. Just because the Democrats are stumbling and fumbling doesn't mean that it's a lock for the Republicans either. They've really got to step it up. I've been working at the grassroots level for 50 years, Tony, saying that we need to get Black Americans back. They voted Republican reliably up until the New Deal in the 1930s. And as you said, Hispanic Americans are largely conservative. They're family oriented. They're religious, largely Catholic. They have conservative values. The Republican Party needs to extend arms and embrace them. And until it does, I don't know how much is going to change. So the ball is in the Republican Party's court.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, a lot of them are entrepreneurs.
We got 1 minute there, Tony. So go ahead and give us your final thoughts and make sure to tell people where they can follow you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the average Latino American, to your point, they are conservative on paper. They're conservative and family oriented in practice. A lot of them are business owners and entrepreneurs. And to speak, I guess, to the Republican Party, to circle back to your last point, I do think that they need to have a strategy that targets influencers and influential people. What the Democrats have done very well in all niches is they've been able to put on payroll and pay for influencers. So when you see your favorite celebrity at the White House, when you see your favorite rapper or your favorite comedian, your favorite actor or actress at the White House, it appears organic, but in fact, they are being paid. And the Democrats have been really good at pulling the wool over.
We got to let it go right there, Tony. We're up against the clock.
The Republican Party needs to embrace influencer marketing.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for being here for State of the Nation, man. At Tony W.